As we wrap up 2025, one thing's clear. Uncertainty isn't temporary. It's the world we live in now. Noble Gold Investments helps Americans protect what they've built with real gold and silver, holding value when everything else feels uncertain. Visit NobleGoldInvestments.com and take your first step toward a safe future. This holiday season, when you open up a qualified account, you'll receive 10 one-ounce commemorative silver holiday coins. Visit Noble Gold today.
Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals, including gold, involves risks. Consult with your tax attorney or financial professional before making an investment decision.
Did you know we have completely ad-free early access to all of our episodes? Well, we do. Not only that, but we have dozens of bonus episodes waiting for you. Head on over to patreon.com/ghosttownpod, and you can check it out for 7 days absolutely free. That's patreon.com/ghosttownpod. A Thai mystery. I'm Jason Horton.
I'm Rebecca Lieb.
And this is Ghost Town.
If you're watching season 3 of White Lotus, this episode might ring familiar to you in a lot of ways. Beautiful art, business conspiracies, shady white men who do a little of this and a little of that. Well, all of these elements don't come from thin air. In fact, this season of White Lotus is rumored to be inspired by a notorious Thai businessman, spy, silk merchant, and antique collector, Jim Thompson. And just like the White Lotus, Thompson's end is its own mysterious and chaotic look into a time and place in Thailand. You can decide how close this case is to the HBO show as we discuss the disappearance of Jim Thompson. Even right after his birth in 1906, Thompson already had quite the reputation. Raised in Greenville, Delaware, Thompson's dad was an extremely wealthy textile manufacturer, and his mom was the daughter of a famed Union Civil War general. Of course, he got all the best private schooling and was a naturally gifted sailor, eventually graduating from Princeton University in 1928 and representing the United States in the 6-meter sailing event at the 1928 Summer Olympics in Amsterdam. After college, he went to the University of Pennsylvania's School of Architecture, but did not finish because, well, he kept failing calculus. But of course, with Thompson, like many wealthy upper-class men in mid-century America, a graduate degree didn't exactly matter. He was on track to a stellar career and became an architect anyway, moving to New York in 1931 to marry another socialite, Patricia Throves, and to work at the firm Holden, McLaughlin & Associates, designing homes, landscapes, and interiors for the richest of the East Coast rich. When he wasn't working, which was often, he was out partying, seeing shows, traveling. He even sat on the board of the Ballet Russe de Monte Carlo. By his mid-30s, however, he got bored with his life as a New York socialite and had begun alienating his family with his increasingly liberal political views. In 1941, World War II prompted him to quit his job and enlist in the Delaware National Guard. Then, Thompson was transferred to a military outpost in Fort Monroe, Virginia, where he met Second Lieutenant Edwin Fahey Black, a graduate student from West Point. It was Black who saw potential in Thompson and encouraged him to join the Office of Strategic Services, the predecessor to the Central Intelligence Agency, or the CIA. His first assignment was with the French Resistance in North Africa, but he was soon sent to Sri Lanka to work with the pro-Allied Free Thai Movement, whose mission it was to help liberate Thailand from the occupying Japanese army. In August 1945, Japan surrendered, officially ending World War II, and Thompson went to Thailand, organizing the official OSS Bangkok office. Upon his arrival, Thompson was immediately charmed by the country's unique identity, and specifically the city of Bangkok, its people, and their art. Ever the rich American, Thompson also saw potential for business opportunities there. While getting acclimated, one of the first friends he made was a woman named Constance or Connie Mangskau, an Allied service translator, who later became one of his closest friends. Remember this name, Connie Mangskau, as she will make an appearance later in Thompson's story. In the spring of 1946, Thompson's marriage had officially fallen apart, as you can probably imagine, and Thompson began working as a military attaché to a former Princeton classmate, Charles Woodruff Yost, the U.S. minister to Thailand. Newly single and establishing himself in Thailand, this also marked the start of Thompson's 11-year affair with Yost's wife, Irina, an open secret to those around them. Thompson worked with Free Thai and Free Laos groups to gather information and defuse conflicts on Thailand's borders. Working with him was Kenneth Landon, an American missionary whose wife, Margaret Landon, was interestingly enough the author of Anna and the King of Siam, the inspiration for the 1956 film The King and I. In 1946, Thompson also officially sought discharge from the military, his curiosity and passion for business leading him away from intelligence and government work and into his most famous venture, Thai silk. The craft of making Thai silk was a local tradition, and Thompson saw the demand for it all over the world. In 1951, he formed the Thai Silk Company, and it immediately took off. His creations became famous, worn by celebrities and socialites, and were even used for costumes in the theatrical adaptation of his friend Margaret Landon's book, The King and I, which, of course, was really great PR for Thompson's company. Thompson's other passion was art. He collected antiquities from temples and caves around the country and built an insanely magnificent house to display his gigantic collection of art and to host parties. Not unlike the life built by Greg Hunt in The White Lotus, I would say, but maybe with a little less mystery. It still stands as a museum to this day, known as the Jim Thompson House. Mind you, Thompson was still a bit of a playboy. In 1950, his longtime lover, Irina Yost, had a child, but neither Thompson nor Yost could establish paternity because at this time, of course, there was no DNA testing. In 1955, Thompson met Elizabeth Lyons, an art historian who had been appointed cultural attaché at the U.S. State Department because, well, no men had applied for the job. Lyons and Jim Thompson became fast friends and were also briefly lovers, bonding over an intense interest in the art of Southeast Asia. At this point, Thompson was unlike any other figure in Thailand. He was an American, an architect, an ex-army officer, a retired spy, a silk merchant, and a high-profile antique and art collector, living in a palatial party estate outside of Bangkok. But then, he would completely disappear. More after this break.
Hi, hello, how are you?
Hello. How's it going out there?
We're checking in.
This is the check-in. This is the check-in. This is the check-in.
You know what to do. just exist.
Yeah, just nothing. Do nothing. Yeah. Do less, yeah. Babe.
Just be in the void with us.
Mm-hmm. It's important. No, it's not.
We want to say hello to anyone who's listening, supporting us, spreading the good word of Ghost Town. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you.
Oh, there's nothing more mysterious than our government, especially those mayors.
Mm.
They have some regional mysteries of their own.
Oh, do they? God, they're so complicated.
Yeah. This mayor was involved in a Des Moines mystery. Right there in Des Moines.
Ooh, sexy Des Moines, Iowa. Oh, yeah. Intrigue.
There's more than corn. And there's more than, what else is in Iowa? There's a pretty big college.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. The band Slipknot.
Slipknot, Iowa. Iowa Writers Workshop, also at University of Iowa. Iowa.
Little more boring than Slipknot, but thank you. There's writers workshop.
I'm pissing off Iowa. Any Iowans that listen to this, I'm so sorry. Buckeyes. Buckeye State.
Well, that mystery is all wrapped up in Chris Hernandez.
Hello.
This mayor is wrapped up in a little mystery in Topeka.
Topeka,
right
Kansas?
There in you're right there in Kansas. You know the old saying, we're not in Topeka anymore.
No. No, we don't know that old saying.
Yeah. It's a new saying.
The new saying, yeah.
To be fair, the places like this is where you can kind of get away with like a lot of stuff, at least historically, maybe a little bit more.
Mm, that's true.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, busybodies, less, you know, less... Or, you know, as compared to like a New York or Chicago or something like that. So, you
yeah,
get I mean, that's why a show like Fargo is so like it's, you know, it's just not extremely dense with CCTV everywhere.
police departments are usually not as competent as maybe bigger cities, as we've learned time and time again.
Yeah. Sometimes the bigger cities aren't that competent either. Hot take.
Whoa. Getting real political.
Right there in Topeka, Marissa Rothermel.
Hello.
This mayor was wrapped up in a mystery in Humboldt County.
Whoa. A lot of weed, California. I believe.
Yeah.
Isn't that where they grow all the weed?
Yeah.
I'm not a cop.
Yeah. But please let us know. If you have the answer, please let us know your name, your address, your social security number, just so we can verify that you're correct.
Yeah, yeah.
In this weed talk, because we're down with it. We're down with it.
Absolutely.
We
peace,
get
man.
Down. You got to get low before you get high, right? Right. Well, token it up in Humboldt County is Matthew Clemens LeRae.
Hello.
This mayor is in a chilly mystery in Oneonta, New York.
Where's that?
Going up towards like Buffalo. Very Oneonta-esque, I guess, is probably the way I would describe it.
Well, descriptive. Great. I'm getting a picture painted for me. Thank you.
Oneonta-ish. I don't know how else to describe it. That's all the Wikipedia says on Oneonta. It says variations on the word Oneonta. That would be Casey Weber.
Hello.
And getting mixed up in some mystery in Amarillo, Texas, which I've cruised through when I moved from New York to California. Cruise right through there, baby. It's like right at the top of Texas, I guess, I think. You know, the little top part, little hat or whatever, Texas. Cruise right through there. They had roads, and that's pretty much...
Gas stations, roads, restaurants, things like that.
They definitely did. Yeah, that's all the Wikipedia says. It says Amarillo, Texas. Jason Horton drove through there and plus roads, and that's it.
Wow, you did your research, so what are you supposed to do?
I did. That's courtesy of the mysterious Kelly Meehan.
Hello.
This mayor got into a rootin' tootin' mystery.
No.
In Wheeling, West Virginia.
Oh, God.
I'm sure there's some guns slinging. I feel like there's maybe one of those outlaw types.
Yeah, there were like pirates and outlaws in that area.
Cowboy man.
Beautiful mountain.
Horse riding guy. Quick draw man. Mm. All man, by the way.
Of course.
So that's what the Wikipedia says, is like just men. Quick draw man. Okay. So that's all caught up in Wheeling, West Virginia's Cat Joselle.
Hello.
This mayor got into a bit of a swampy mystery in Gainesville, Florida.
Gators.
Huh. Gators. There's gators out there. And it's like, where's the body part? I don't know. Probably a gator ate it. That's what they're supposed to do. Yeah. Well, you know, got who was just like, it's too humid out here to do mystery, but this is the best place because no one wants to come here because it's too humid. Ashley Mattson.
Hello. Sorry, can you hear that siren?
It's actually perfectly timed. They're coming for Matthew Clemens LeRae from talking about the weed.
Yeah, they
found out the weed.
We got it.
But you said,
We didn't do that.
Yeah, but they think it's us.
Even though we just talked about it. I didn't call anyone. I didn't say anything. I didn't say shit to anyone.
Yeah. They got scared because we're about to talk about our governor. Do you think it's a coincidence? Do you think the governor put in a phone call?
We don't.
They called off the dogs. They called off the attack. Our governor, what area? I don't know. Is literally space an area?
The place of space. When you look up space on Wikipedia, it is so long that you can't even read it in one lifetime.
Yes.
So... how about that?
Our governor just cruising around up high, hearing the names of these little towns and laughing. Ha,
yeah,
ha,
so
ha,
cute.
Oh, you
this
have a road?
Cute.
Ha, 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 ha,
ha, mm-hmm. Ha. Mm-hmm. Slipknot. Ha, 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 ha.
It was a rumor to be one of the early members of Slipknot. You know, they all wear masks, and there's like 15 of them.
Mm-hmm.
But was like... No, I just think I'll be a gatekeeper to life itself instead and mm-hmm. then quit. It's right there in the Wikipedia.
Right there in the Wikipedia.
It's our all-knowing, all-mysterious governor,
Avian
Noble. If you want no ads, no chit-chat, 7 days free, bonus episodes, and want to support us there, head on over to patreon.com/ghosttownpod. You want to get back into it?
Let's do it. Though he would not know it yet, in 1967, high-profile silk businessman Jim Thompson's days were numbered. In late March, he left Bangkok to spend a day in Penang with Connie Mangskau, remember her, his longtime friend. On Friday, March 24th, they headed for the highlands of Malaysia, a mountainous region covered by intractable jungle. There, they vacationed at the Moonlight Bungalow, now called the Jim Thompson Cottage, their hosts being Lin Tian Gi, a Singaporean chemist, and Helen Ling, his American-born wife. On Sunday, all four got up early to attend morning services at All Souls Church. While the rest were preparing themselves for the service, Thompson told his friends that he was going on a short walk down Kamuting Road. After walking about 1.2 miles, Thompson reached the main road, where, for the first time, he was alone for approximately 20 minutes. Then he went back to meet up with his friends without any issue, and they all drove on to church, according to plan. The Easter service lasted a little more than an hour. When it ended, at noon, the group returned to the Moonlight Bungalow for lunch. Then, at 1:30 p.m., Thompson left the bungalow for another walk. Before leaving, he waved goodbye to Helen Ling and Connie Mangskau, who watched him walk down the bungalow's only access road into the jungle. Thompson was out and about for hours. At around 4 p.m., a cook from the Lutheran Mission Bungalow saw him when he came by and said hello. At 6 p.m., Thompson was not back to his bungalow, and his friends began to get nervous. After that, things escalated quickly. A reward was issued for the return of Thompson, or any knowledge around his disappearance. That night began the, quote, biggest land search in Malaysian history, involving more than 500 people of varied backgrounds, including the Malaysian Police Field Force, reward hunters, tourists, residents, scouts, missionaries, adventure seekers, American students, and British servicemen convalescing at the resort. The police declared Thompson lost when Thompson was not found, and no clues, none, were unearthed. The official search lasted 11 days, and sporadic additional searching went on for months and months. The official explanation for Thompson's disappearance was that Thompson had probably become lost in the jungle or had fallen down a ravine while out walking, though no body was ever found or identified as his. Of course, the disappearance of a playboy architect, spy, art collector, silk magnate was the stuff of tabloids, and the case generated worldwide publicity and tons of theories, with the most press reports and analysts contending that Thompson had been kidnapped, murdered by business rivals, or perhaps had voluntarily left to do secret spy work in resolving the Vietnam War. Of course, none of this was proven whatsoever. Tragically and suspiciously, one of Thompson's five siblings, his sister Catherine Thompson Wood, was found beaten to death in her home in Centerville, Delaware, in August 1967, a mere 6 months after Thompson's disappearance. This murder also went unsolved and added more notoriety to Thompson's own disappearance. Back in Thailand, Thompson's case increasingly grew cold and began to attract more unorthodox helpers, including traditional magicians and Chinese mystics. Quote, because of the reward for Thompson alive or dead, four or five of these temple mediums formed themselves into a band with cymbals, drums, and so on, and went into the jungle, remembers Chow Chuan Sheng, who at the time managed a local hotel. But they didn't reappear, he said, so the police had to send people to rescue them. Then there was Peter Hurkos, a renowned TV psychic and entertainer, who came to Malaysia and began believing that Thompson was working for the CIA. His theory was that he had been abducted to another country, but was not being held for ransom. Hurkos claimed that he, quote, saw 14 men in dark green uniforms, communists, abducting Thompson and bundling him into an army truck. Others claim that he had staged his own disappearance, possibly because he feared being exposed as either gay or a double agent. Phil Rivers, a former officer in the Malaysian police and a longtime resident of the Cameroon Highlands, said that, as the years went on, the conspiracy theories became more and more crazy. Quote, they had convoys of Thai cars racing up and down the hills. They had mysterious strangers showing up, saying they'd been told he was hidden in a nearby bungalow, or in a cave, or he was at the top of a mountain somewhere. Some believed he had fallen into an animal pit dug by the indigenous people of the area and was critically injured and then died. A deathbed confession made by a local stated that Thompson was knocked down by a timber lorry and that his body was taken away and run through a buzzsaw. Others believe that Thompson had been eaten by a tiger, which, at this point, feels like one of the more believable theories. In 2007, a researcher named Richard Hughes re-examined the case, believing a clue to Thompson's disappearance may have lied in some bone fragments discovered by local settlers in 1985 in a grave at the edge of a vegetable garden in the Cameroon Highlands. Said Hughes, quote, I still insist, like others who know far more about the affair than I do, that he, Thompson, disappeared by his own choice and will, and not by force. To date, there have been no confirmation that these bones, found in 1985, belonged to Thompson, but they are apparently in a secure place for further study. In 2015, an extremely thorough analysis was conducted around the original 1967 investigation by Llewellyn Lew Toulmin, a PhD in public administration, policy analysis, and economics, who is a world traveler and analyst specializing in missing persons and aircraft cases, among other communications and policy concentrations. The analysis drew on interviews with the leader of and participants in the search, on interviews with other actors, on principles and mathematics developed by the U.S. National Association for Search and Rescue, on reviews of FBI, OSS, CIA, and U.S. Department of State material on the case, and on Thompson and other various sources. The analysis concluded some important things about the investigation, namely that Thompson's remains are highly likely to still be in the Cameroon Highlands, and that sightings of the silk magnate had occurred after his disappearance, not previously known to the public. Here are some highlights of the 500, I said it was thorough, page report. First, that the search for Thompson lasted about 1,448 days, which seems like a lot, but isn't really enough to cover all the 17.7 square miles that were estimated to be the target zone where Thompson disappeared. Next, the probability of success of finding Thompson was really 43% to 30% or even less, meaning that there was a fairly high chance that the search completely missed Thompson's body, if it was in the original general search area. Various possible, likely, or certain errors in search tactics and execution reduced the quality of the search effort. Just because it was, quote, the biggest land search in Malaysian history, according to Toulmin, it was almost certainly not the, quote, best search in Malaysian history. Then, a possible sighting of Thompson in Tahiti took place several months after the disappearance. Of the 25 possible causes for the disappearance cited by the press in 1967, about half can be eliminated as not credible. Then, of all the eyewitnesses who may have seen Thompson after he left the area, two can be eliminated as being too far from Thompson to be credible, and the rest are of fairly low to very low credibility. The Toulmin report also reviewed the brutal, still unsolved murder of Thompson's sister, and concluded that there was no provable link between the Thompson disappearance and the murder of his sister, that the two cases were unlikely to be related, just incredibly troubling and tragic. Of course, even now, Reddit is rife with opinions and theories on this compelling case, and while not formally connected to Season 3 of The White Lotus, comparisons are being drawn, especially after the cast was seen visiting Jim Thompson's house during filming in July of 2024. Parallels, of course, are already present in the HBO hit drama. Strange businessmen who did this and did that, walks down service roads, shady financial dealings, and of course, beautiful art and beautiful surroundings, just like Thompson would have loved. Says a fan of the show and traveler Rachel J. Styling, Jim's disappearance and death is still unknown, and I'm intrigued by all the ties and parallels to his story in The White Lotus. I know too much now from getting the tour, and can't wait to see how the writers unfold the mystery. Perhaps, as Season 3 does unfold, we'll get some more theories and viewpoints surrounding Jim Thompson's death. Or at the very least, a fictional mystery with its own concrete conclusion.